Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 66 of the Competitive Erotic Fanfiction Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Cook, and you've found the internet's number one most trusted source for Muppet boners and horny loners. Hey, we've got a new sponsor. We've got an affiliate deal here with Amazon. If you're looking to do any shopping with Amazon and want to help out the podcast, you can go to the Nerdist page for Competitive Erotic Fanfiction and click on the Amazon banner and shop as you normally would, and Daddy gets a little taste. We'd really appreciate it. But today, we've got round two from a show recorded August 27th, 2013 at the Waiting Room in Omaha, Nebraska, where I will be back for Cromfest on May 25th, 2014. But for now, let's listen to round two from the last Omaha show featuring Kyle Kinane, Mike Perry, Ryan De La Garza, Bob Gurnett, and Alex Monger reading pieces they wrote based upon audience suggestions. So first you'll hear them choose topics, then we'll fast forward to hear the finished pieces. Enjoy. All right, Ian, if I could get those suggestions, and please welcome your round two comics who'll be writing based upon your suggestions, ladies and gentlemen, Mike Perry, Ryan De La Garza, Bob Gurnett, Alice Monger, and Kyle Kinane. Ian. Yep, moving along. Let's start with Ryan De La Garza. Step up to the mic, buddy. Clap your hands for Ryan. So here's how this works. If he likes the first suggestion, he can just take it and run with it. If he doesn't like it or he isn't sure, I'll draw a second one, but then you guys vote with applause on which one he has to write. So, Ryan, your first suggestion is Short Circuit.
Yes,
taking it?
I'm taking it.
Why wouldn't you? Ryan De La Garza, ladies and gentlemen. Keep it going for Alice Monger. Your first option is Glenn Beck.
No.
Really? Surprising. All right. Would have gone with it myself. Okay, the second option is Ghostbusters. So, ladies and gentlemen, I leave it up to you. Who wants to hear Glenn Beck? Who would like to hear Ghostbusters? Ghostbusters it is. Alice Monger, ladies and gentlemen, keep it going for Kyle Kinane. Your first option is Ken Burns documentaries. Which is a pretty smart suggestion for somebody who can't spell documentaries.
Are you talking about me or the person that wrote the card?
Both.
All right. Let's see what's next.
Ewoks.
Oh, fuck that.
That's Star Wars. Remember, guys, I said no Star Wars? All right. The Adventures of Pete and Pete. I leave it to you, Omaha. Who wants to hear Ken Burns? Who wants to hear The Adventures of Pete and Pete? Pete and Pete it is, Kyle. Right. Yeah, I can tell you're excited. Keep it going for Bob, right?
Yeah.
Bob Gurnett, ladies and gentlemen. I should tell you guys I'm not from here. Ian Douglas Terry booked the show. I'm going to forget people's names throughout the course of the evening. Your first option, Bob, is The Wire.
Pass.
All right. Well, we'll see about that. Nope. Not a real thing. The movie Tremors. So, who wants to hear The Wire?
Yeah!
You want your suggestion back? Who wants to hear Tremors? Tremors it is, Bob. And finally, Mr. Mike Perry. Mike Perry. It's called Process of Elimination. Ladies and gentlemen, Winnie the Pooh.
I just heard that one. Let's roll the dice.
I agree. Jesus. Rodney King. None of this is my fault. It's up to you guys. Who wants to hear Winnie the Pooh? Who wants to hear Rodney King? Racism over pedophilia. All right, I applaud you, Omaha. Let's give a warm welcome to your first... Mike Perry, right? Did I get it right? Mike Perry, and I got his name right. That's a twofer.
That's a big stick you have there, officer. It wasn't the first time Rodney had used those words. In fact, he had been using those exact words for the past 7 months in his off-Broadway play titled, "That's a Big Stick You Have There, Officer." "What are you going to do with it?" he asked, almost sounding bored. Rodney knew exactly what the man playing the officer was going to do with it. He was going to stroke it like he was manipulating the shaft of his own cock, then pop his belt off, drop his pants, and smack himself on the ass with it. The cop, an actual ex-LA police officer named Mark Furman, started stroking the nightstick he was holding like he was manipulating the shaft of his own cock. Then he popped his belt off, dropped his pants, and smacked himself on the ass with it. That woke something up in Rodney. Something he hadn't felt since March 3rd, 1991. And like that night, he was grateful that this was also being videotaped. "Why don't you let me see that stick?" Rodney asked. Mark was confused. That wasn't the next line. "You'll have to take it from me," Mark improvised, excited to see where this was heading. Rodney grabbed the nightstick, pulling it, and the naked, from the waist down, Mark Furman up against him. "I've got a big stick too," Rodney said. Mark knew they were off script for sure now, going only on instinct. Not that it mattered. No one had ever paid to see this play, and the very idea that it was a play was just forced onto this story in the stream of consciousness writing in an effort to get started. "I know you have a big stick," Mark replied. "I can feel it against my leg." Rodney's dick had become hard. As hard as an African-American porn star's dick, in any number of porn movies about black men having sex with white women, usually billed as teens, MILFs, or big and beautiful. Mark reached down to feel the T-ball bat-sized member, but Rodney stopped him. "I'm in charge tonight." And he spun Mark around and forced him to bend over. Rodney picked up the handcuffs that were attached to the belt on the pants that Mark took off on the first page. Mark didn't know why, but he allowed Rodney to pull his arms behind his back and bind him with the cuffs. Rodney spread Mark's ass cheeks and saw his tight asshole. Rodney thought to himself. "It's kind of brown-tinted and hairier than I thought it would be. I expected more pink. I wonder what mine looks like." He also wondered if his would make the same tearing sound that Mark's did from an unlubricated cock that was shoved into it. Rodney laughed to himself when he considered it wasn't pink, but it was getting more red with blood from the continued tearing. Rodney didn't stop, though. He kept going with a ferocity of 22 and a half years of pent-up frustration. Mark screaming, first in pain, then in slight ecstasy, and then silent as he passed out from the loss of blood. Rodney finished, covering Mark's limp body in his jizz. His jizz, even more white than Mark. "And that's why you have to find Rodney King guilty of battery," said Marcia Clark, out of retirement for this high-profile case. And the jury agreed. Rodney King had to pay for his crime.
There it is. Mike Perry. Who else we got? Ladies and gentlemen, Alice Monger, clap your hands.
This story is called The Stay Fucked Marshmallow Man. Longtime couple Peter Venkman and Dana Barrett are enjoying a nice summer stroll around Central Park when Dana begins to act a little funny. Now, it's been years since the woman has been possessed by the demon Zool, but Venkman knew the warning signs. He cautiously let go of her hand as she slowly turned around and spoke in a creepy voice, "I'm horny." He didn't know how to reply, so she continued, "Are you the fuck god?" Venkman was terrified, and he said, "No." Demon Dana replied quickly by saying, "Peter, when someone asks you if you're the fuck god, you say yes." He decided he had no way out. "All right," he said, "this chick is toast." He was very nervous as he unbuttoned his khaki pants, but he realized that his only option was to fuck the demon out of Dana so they could return to the quiet, reserved life that they were previously enjoying. Yes, said Demon Dana. Grab your stick. Heat it up. Make it hard. Peter was surprisingly aroused by the demanding voice of his love, so he took hold of his throbbing member as he was instructed. Dana begins to strip as he teases his rock-hard, ghost-busting penis in the middle of the park in front of her. She gazes in his eyes as her floppy demon boobs pop out of her top and says, "Baby, show me the energy stream from your proton pack." And by proton pack, she meant wiener. But don't worry, God, because they were married. Peter walks over to his beloved and throws her over the nearest boulder. Before he penetrated her precious flower, he said in his most serious, sexy voice, "Who are you gonna call?" Dana whipped her face around and... I'm so sorry. Dana whipped her face around and stated, "You really know how to wet my whistle, babe." And by whistle, she meant vagina. "Now fuck me, fuck God," she insisted. He put his hard rock cock into that tight pussy and with the sole mission of fucking that demon right out of her. The sensations that he felt were overwhelming, and he couldn't help but yell, "I love you, Dana." Dana flipped over the rock, furious, and said, "There is no Dana, only Zool." Peter knew he had to act fast in order to continue to the fuck party, so he quickly walked over to her and whispered, "Does Zool want fuck God to play with her ass?" And then the whistle got wetter, folks. As he bent her over again, Peter knew that this was his last chance to get his wife back. He spit on his firm penis and gently inserted it into her compact asshole, as two consenting adult demons often do. He rode Zool's ass on that boulder for what seemed like hours, but the demon would not back down. He decided to try one last thing. He reached his hand around and stroked her clitoris, like a man, until she came. As she's coming, he couldn't hold it back any longer. Peter pulled out of her teeny butthole and shot a cum load out of his proton pack so big that no containment unit in the world could hold it down. And as hundreds of New Yorkers wiped marshmallow goo from their faces, Peter and real Dana shared a soft kiss, took hold of each other's hands, and watched the sunset together, more in love than ever before. Thank you.
Alice Monger with possibly the most romantic ending we've ever had on this disgusting show. Who else is ready? Someone pop out right now. There it is. It's Bob Gurnett.
I'm ready.
Do it.
I haven't seen Tremors since I was about 15.
Neither have I.
We got this. Val McKee and Earl Bassett stood outside their rundown store. The two handymen from Perfection, Nevada were caked with sweat and dirt as they worked feverishly, attempting to restore the engine of an old Chevy pickup truck. Val was bent over the hood. Val is Kevin Bacon, for those of you guys who need to know, for the visuals. Val was bent over the hood of the car while Earl stood behind him. Earl paced back and forth, breathing heavily. He was admiring the muscular and full backside of Val. He took a moment and took in this perfectly sculpted rear. He called Val's ass the perfection of perfection, because that is what it is, and that is where they are from. He imagined it to be much firmer than the pair of couch cushions he routinely penetrates, fantasizing that one day he could know for sure. "A wrench, damn it, Earl! A wrench. I need a wrench." Val stood up straight. His tank top revealed his defined biceps. Earl just wished he could be the third bi inside Val. "Sorry, Val. I was just distracted." His quivering hand reached into the toolbox and tossed the wrench through the air. While the wrench was midair, the ground trembled something fierce. Earl thought for a moment that possibly his sheer sexual aggression that was tightly gift-wrapped under his coveralls had caused a seismic disturbance. But both men stumbled. Val smiled. "It's just a tremor. You spook easily. Man up." "If only I could man up." I would man up that man. Val bent over to retrieve the wrench from the dirt, once again presenting, much like a peacock would, his supple cheeks tightly masked in denim. Earl could not help himself anymore. He could not stop imagining those haunches, what those haunches looked like without that constrictive fabric. He must know. He had to know. He walked up and stood directly behind Val while Val was stooped over, and he gently rubbed his stony member along Val's backside. Val did not seem shocked. Instead, turned back and said, "It's hard work being handyman. You ever get sick of living hand to mouth?" Val then turned and winked. Earl knew this was finally the sign he had been praying for. How about fist to ass instead? He tore off Val's jeans as if they were made of wet paper towels and clenched his red dirt dusted fist. He reached down and dipped his fist into the oil pan that balanced next to the broken down Chevy. Then he then took that fist covered in motor oil and desert dirt. He paused for only a moment before Val shouted, "Do it! Be my handyman!" Before Earl could fulfill his primal urges, a second, much more powerful tremor shook the ground, but this one did not stop them. Earl thrust his fist deep inside Val. Val shuddered and began to massage Earl's long neglected cock through his coveralls. Earl thought he might come before the main event. How badly he needed to be inside Val. He began to attempt to remove his coveralls without removing his fist from the gaping pit of Val's ass. He's done this before, thought Earl. No ass is this cavernous without priming. Coveralls really were the perfect outfit for sudden, impromptu anal sex. They were the reason why Earl loved them. He never knew when they would come in handy or help him come from a handy. But before he could remove the second button, he heard a familiar voice scream, "Hey, what the fuck are you guys doing?" It was Walter Cheng. He's the Asian guy from the movie, if you didn't figure that out. Val froze, but Earl was past the point of no return. The Pope himself could have caught them, and nothing would stop him from taking his trophy. He had waited too long. Then a third tremor, the most violent of the tremors, shattered the moment of bliss that Earl had imagined and ejaculated to for years. The tremor, however, was a godsend, it ended up. Just then, a third gargantuan throbbing tube of flesh shot out of the ground. But this one had a giant flicking tongue, and this tongue snatched Chang and swallowed him whole. Val did not miss a beat. That gives me an idea. He helped remove Earl's hand from his ass and turned around, positioned himself in front of Earl, and took Earl's member to the back of his throat. Then he slowly backed away, guiding Earl with him towards the now strange alien tongue flicking back and forth in the dirt. Val then took both his hands and spread his cheeks. "This'll be good." The unknown beast may have not spoke English, but it spoke the language of lust. The flicking tongue massaged the inside of Val's now lubed anus, and this scene carried on for a few moments. Val, deep-throating Earl, all the way back. The worm-like creature wildly flicking away at Val's oiled pinwheel. It was too much for all three of them, you see. The organ of the worm, the sexual organ of the worm, was his tongue. After a few moments, all three came. First, Earl. Earl shot his thick fetus starter kit into Val's mouth. The taste of his surprisingly sweet semen caused Val, who had been jerking himself off, to come into the dirt with the velocity of one of those really high-end super soakers. Then with that, the worm shot his fuckwater high into the sky. Miles around, people thought a new geyser had been struck. Then a fourth tremor, the most powerful tremor of the whole day, because that tremor was a tremor of pure ecstasy.
There it is. Bob Gurnett with Tremors. Ryan De La Garza, ladies and gentlemen. Clap your hands for Ryan.
I had short circuit.
Oh my God, Ben, what is that thing? Stephanie asked as she entered a sweaty shanty that reeked of curry and metal solder.
Oh, don't be scared. That is number 5. He is a robot who escaped a military facility when he learned he would be used as a weapon. He desires peace.
Wait, he learned?
Oh yes, he can learn, like us, but better, faster.
That's amazing. Ben, I have an idea. Why don't you go to the store and pick up some Wheat Thins? I'm gonna see if I can teach this half tank, half brainiac how to garden. Yeah, I have a few holes that I really need filled, like dirt holes. Okay. Ben left the shack and rode his bike into the street. He got hit by a bus, but who cares? So, your name's number 5? I hope that isn't a measure of inches.
Call me Johnny, Steph. 5 is indeed a measure of inches. How do robots talk? It is short for 500.
Prove it, said Steph, as the dungeon between her legs secreted like so much motor oil from the cock of an already excited sentient super soldier.
Okay, Johnny 5 said cheerfully as his telescoping member thrusted forth from between his tank-like treads. You may want to hold on, said Johnny, winking one eye and smiling in anticipation.
Hey, you kind of seem to know...
Shh. Johnny interrupted. I said, hang on.
So she did. She gripped the tip of J5's metal monstrosity as it extended outward through the door of the shanty and upward above the city's skyline.
I'm scared, Johnny. Don't be, Steph. This is how maximum pleasure is achieved by my unit.
500 feet above the city, Johnny encouraged Steph.
The sound was carrying quite well that day. Now bounce.
Steph gripped Johnny's Robo Dick Deluxe with a death grip that would make MC Ride pray for a guillotine. And she bounced with every pound of her tiny frame, his metal foreskin leaving cuts on her forearms like a suicide girl sans tattoos. And as she bled, her arms gushing, it just lubed up Johnny's dick and made him that much hotter.
Oh yes, a little more, 2 more pumps.
Stephanie, almost dead from blood loss, now with the last of her strength, gave 2 final pumps, and Johnny's towering member rumbled deep, deep down.
Yes, here it comes.
Boom. A colossal eruption exploded forth from Johnny, but it was not cum. It was not motor oil. It was a laser. Which then engulfed the entire country of Russia, or whoever we were supposedly at war with when that movie was filmed. Johnny began laughing.
Ha, ha, ha.
Stephanie's lifeless body then tumbled down and crashed to Johnny's treads.
And you thought I wanted peace. Ha ha. Johnny 5 is alive. You are dead.
Ryan De La Garza. And keep it going for your final competitor, Kyle Kinane. There he is. Any second. He's pissing? Oh, for fuck's sake. The only professional on this show, Mr. Kyle Kinane, the only TV credits on this goddamn show, can't keep his wiener out of his hand for 3 minutes. Ugh. Well, here's what I do when I have to kill time. I read suggestions we didn't get to. Such as Gremlins. That would have been gross. Hannah Montana. Timely. It's Miley Cyrus. 30 Rock. I just really like that show. There he is, Kyle Kinane, still cinching up the old belt buckle.
I had to pee when I sat down to write this.
We're at O'Leary's tomorrow, by the way. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, we're doing O'Leavers.
O'Leavers, thanks.
We're showing O'Leavers, 9:30. So we're jokes. Okay. Adventures of Pete and Pete. I don't know anything about this. Mike Marona walked out of yet another casting office defeated. We'll call you is all he heard these days. His last paying role was as a customer in a Hardee's commercial, but he'd been cut. The checks were dwindling out, and his Big Pete money had been squandered on jet boats and novelty beanbag chairs. Hey, it was the 90s. Then, of course, 9/11 happened and robbed America of her innocence. Suddenly, the novelty of a Ginger Brother comedy kids duo seemed as irrelevant as a Third Eye Blind song. As he shuffled back to the parking lot, a pretty nice Nissan Sentra with tinted windows pulled up. The driver lowered his window, and a familiar voice said, "Hey, old buddy." "Danny," Mike said. "Little Pete himself. Oh, man, what's happening? You seem to be doing pretty good." They both acknowledged the Sentra. "Yeah, man, I got into my fallback career right when AOPAP got canceled," Danny said proudly. Mike was impressed. "Oh, man, I just kept acting. What did you get into?" Danny beamed. "Sex tapes." "Sex tapes?" Mike was befuddled. "Yeah, man, fucking porno, dude." Mike was double befuddled. "Weren't you like 14 or some shit when we went off the air?" "Totally," said Danny. "I went to Romania for a few years. They got real lenient sex laws over there." "Wow, that's real fucked up, Dan." "Totally," he said again with the same dead smile. The two of them sat there awkwardly for a moment before Danny blurted out, "Hey, man, I've got an idea." "What's that?" Mike asked. "We should do a reunion," said Danny. "Well, that's the first sensible thing I've heard you say," said Mike. "A fuck reunion," said Danny. "Wait, that's like not even a thing," said Mike. "I can give you $380. "Yeah, all right." Mike found himself in the front seat of Danny's car, confused, but also envious of this really pretty nice Sentra. "Hey, bro, relax. You want me to rub you off so you won't be nervous when we get to the studio?" said Danny. "Wait, what? Fuck no. What are you talking about?" "Well, no, I just mean because later, when we Eiffel Tower some chick for this reunion vid, we're going to have to see each other's beetroots. So if you lose your rock, it kind of fucks up the whole production. Remember the time Artie showed up drunk and couldn't remember his lines? It's kind of like that." "Yeah, but we worked together for a long time. I think we could do this. I think we established our chemistry back. Like, dude, I can give you $57. "Yeah, all right." Mike took his freckled cherub out of his pants in an offering to Danny. "Bro, start yourself off for a bit." "Wait, why?" said Mike. "For old time's sake. That doesn't even make any sense." "I can give you $21. "Yeah, all right." Mike began to knead his scared soft pretzel, pulling at the bubblegum-colored flesh in an effort to coax anything. Danny glanced over occasionally, licking his lips. "Yeah, Big Pete beats the big meat." "Shut up, Danny, I'm trying to concentrate." "Let me help." He pulled over the well-maintained Sentra to the side of the road. "Wait, dude, what are you doing? Dude, we gotta have the chemistry to make this work. Otherwise, you won't get the $146. "I thought you said it was $380. "Not now," shouted Danny as he took Big Pete's big meat into his gobbler. "I don't feel comfortable with this, Danny." "I'll give you $62, he mumbled. "Oh, God, what has become of my life," thought Mike. "I was a beloved child star. I was admired by millions." As he reminisced, he relaxed. And as he relaxed, his dough hardened. And as he ended his youth, as he enjoyed his youth, Danny enjoyed blowing his fellow redheaded child star buddy right on his boner. That's where you blow somebody on their boners. Mike came in a chewy spurt of nostalgia. An orgasm that harkened back to a brighter time. Back when he and Danny were kings of Nickelodeon, and they only knew semen by their code name, Wiener Snot. Danny brought his face up from Mike's lap, wiped his chin of the excess Wiener Snot, and like not a moment had gone by since they were co-stars, they exclaimed in unison, "Now that's what I call an adventure." Yeah, that's it.
Kyle Kinane. Let's get everybody out from round two. All right. Guys, I think I don't think we had any heterosexual sex between humans on this show. I think all the human sex was gay dudes. That's an accomplishment. We had demons, we had robots, dogs, and then just guys fucking each other. So, who says there isn't equality in America? All right. So I'm going to remind you what everybody did again from the top, and then we'll vote on a winner. We started with Mike Perry with Rodney King, and then we had Alice Monger with Ghostbusters, Bob Gurnett with Tremors, Ryan De La Garza with Short Circuit, and finally Kyle Kinane with Pete and Pete. So, starting from Mike Perry, Rodney King. Alice Monger, Ghostbusters. Bob Gurnett, Tremors. Ryan De La Garza, Short Circuit. Kyle Kinane, Pete and Pete. All right, I think we got to have a runoff between Mike Perry and Kyle Kinane. So, starting with Mr. Mike Perry, Rodney King. Kyle Kinane, Pete and Pete. Your round two champion by a hair, Mr. Kyle Kinane. Clap your hands for all the competitors from round two.
Everybody you saw today. That does it for round two. To hear round one from this show, featuring five comics reading pieces they wrote in advance based upon topics of their choosing, go back and download episode 65. Hey, if you like what you heard, please subscribe and leave us a rating on iTunes. It's a big help, as are positive comments. Negative comments can always be directed to the podcast Terrified with Dave Ross. Upcoming live shows include May 15th at Nerdmelt in Los Angeles. That is the final Nerdmelt show before we move on to a mysterious new venue. May 23rd, Austin Sketchfest at the Spider House Ballroom. May 30th, Limestone Comedy Fest in Bloomington, Indiana. June 26th, back at Union Hall in New York City, one of my absolute favorite places. And June 27th, Great Scott in Alston, Massachusetts. Looking forward to that. For more details, follow me on Twitter, at Brian Cooking, or you can always follow the show, at CE Fanfic. See you next time.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.